This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show Series 5, Episode 31. Hit it into the long grass. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we get an email from a guy in New York with some unique playing conditions. And we also hear from a left-handed bowler who wants to know a little bit more about protein powder. Plus, there is a rush for new skills in the game. Can we really do it all? Find out on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide to bashing your way to the top of the game, whether you're a coach, whether you're a player, whether you're a batsman, whether you're a bowler, or whether you're a specialist fielder. Whatever you want to do, we can help you out. My name's David Hinchliffe, and joining me, as always, on the line is Mark Garraway. Still on holidays, Garrows, what are you up to?
Yeah, only another couple of weeks, so it's getting to that countdown time. Quite a chilled week this week, actually. Watched a bit of the test match, looking forward to Lovely. The next test match. I might make an appearance there in the stands, obviously, on Monday, which I'm looking forward to. So, yeah, all good, mate.
There's the famous story of Bob Taylor, of course, who kept wicket for England, didn't he, when he went to the match as a spectator?
He certainly did, and he was one of four, I believe, that kept wicket for England in that particular test match after Bruce French got hit on the head by Richard Hadley.
That's right, and there were no byes.
Yeah, I'm not sure that would be the same if I walk out of the OCS stand next Monday, particularly if it's about an hour or two into the play.
Do you know what? I don't think it's even allowed anymore, is it, to keep wicket if you're a sub?
Yeah, 12th man's not allowed to put the pads on anymore.
Oh, he can't, right, okay.
Yeah, no, he's not allowed, which is a great shame.
Yeah, well, you know, we don't get stories like that. Now, that voice, that second voice that you heard there, or third voice, I guess, is Sam Lavery. He's cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. Also on holidays, Lavers?
I suppose so, yeah. Still the cricket season, so...
Never on holiday.
Never really on holidays, but yeah, no school at the moment, just... stay in contact with some of the boys from school and doing a bit of work with them, and then obviously a few other things going on as well. So yeah, keeping myself pretty busy, but yeah, not as hectic as it has been during the school term.
Yes, well, you had some time to take a lot of photos for your article this week on the site, so that was enjoyable, going through those and seeing the amount of kit that you lug around with you.
That was quick fire. I just threw everything on the grass and started snapping, and that was it, really. Yeah.
We all love a bit of kit, so if there's anyone out there listening to that and they want to find out what Lavers likes and also what the people he's other coaches that he spoke to likes to use for coaching equipment, then
Mr. Garraway was one of those.
Yeah, and I'd never replied to your text.
Yeah, Mr. Hinchliffe wasn't, actually.
Have a wander over to pitchvision.com/academy and have a look at Lavers' article on coaching kit. There's always I always love stuff like that, so. It's a good one. Now, there was also an article this week on Crick Info regarding the basics, which is one of those things that you hear old players who have turned maybe to commentary or coaching saying, well, you know, people don't work on the basics as much as they used to. I don't know whether that's true or not, but there is certainly more skills to be acquired in the world of cricket these days. So surely we can't do it all. So is there going to be a falling away of some skills which are used less in the hunt for skills which are used more, perhaps? Or can we do it all? Is there time to get everything in, every shot, every slower ball, everything?
I think he's got a point about close catching in particular, and that was his big thing. I think there's no doubt that high catching and boundary fielding has moved on significantly in the last, you know, 30, 40 years as a result of initially one-day cricket and then T20. I don't think that's even up for discussion. Mm. But certainly, close catching, I think, is something that it's a blimmin' difficult thing for you to simulate, purely because, you know, when you're doing a drill, you expect the ball to come to you and the ball is going to come to you. And the realistic situation of a game of cricket is you might wait 3 or 4 weeks for an edge to come to you at slip. Mm. And you get defined or by whether you come up with the ball or whether the ball hits the deck. And in practices, we can't simulate that because obviously the time issue. But I would say that there's been no difference between the development of slip catching and closer wicket catching, so short leg and silly point, to the cricket that I saw 30 years ago when I first started getting interested in the game. You know, we had somebody like Bob Warmer, who was an amazing slip fielder. And they were as good, if not better, than any of the guys that are around today. I suppose somebody like Mark Waugh in the era before 2020 made slip catching his own and could practice just slip catching for large parts of his practices because he didn't have to worry about fielding on the boundary. He didn't have to worry about being a specialist deep third man or any of the things that happen nowadays. So I see where Ian's coming from. I think the important thing for me about the article that he's written here is it's about India and the fact that they're playing against a spinner who isn't world-renowned yet and they've struggled, and Indian batters in the past generally haven't. And I think the undertone is that, you know, the IPL and all of the things that they've been subjected to the last few years have taken away the practice from the real basics that the likes of Sachin and Dravid and Lakshman and Ganguly would have grown up with, which is effectively playing lots of spin. Is it achievable to get everything in? It's very difficult. And ultimately, I think it comes down to what your priority is as a coach and maybe as a country as well. And it would be right to say that post becoming number one in the world a few years ago, India did very much put their eggs in one basket and say, I want to win, or we want to win the home World Cup, which they did in 2011. And when you put all your eggs in that basket, you're likely to develop cricketers that are going to be geared towards that format. And I think that's pretty much what's happened. And it will be interesting to see where their focus is going forward from this point onwards.
It's an interesting idea that it's the change in balance between formats that is sat behind some of the changes in the way that people train. That makes perfect sense to me. And then I guess if you look at it at club level, Lavers, formats haven't really changed much in club cricket. Yeah, there's probably more 2020 cricket played, but the actual format itself of the games is usually about the same, you know, we'll give or take 10 overs here or there. So do you think that the basics have changed much at below that level of international and perhaps professional cricket?
They probably have slightly. Even though the format hasn't changed, a lot of the learning that goes on is simply by watching. And given that a lot of the watching of cricket that people do is now watching 2020 cricket and different formats and probably less so or less exposure to test cricket and more to the shorter forms of the game just because they're on the telly a lot, then the learning process is probably more geared towards that type of cricket now. And even sort of subconsciously, people spend a lot of time thinking about 2020 cricket, and that automatically then sort of creeps into their game, whether it's the right thing for them to be using or not. It's what they see. It's what they grew up watching. We know I don't think anyone knows a 10-year-old cricketer who doesn't try and play a reverse sweep at least once every training session, I'm sure, because it's what they grew up watching. And previously, they weren't exposed to these options. They weren't aware of the different skills that could be utilised in a game. So it didn't come into their conscious mind or their subconscious mind either. So they were just focusing on what they knew. And what they knew was driving down the ground, hitting a pull shot, etc. But as they're more aware of what's going on and the element of creativity comes around, there are times when they'll go looking to do their own thing and they'll look to introduce these new shots or new deliveries. So possibly that does dilute the time commitment available to the core basics that have been used over the years. Again, it's another time availability thing. And with international cricketers, in all honesty, probably not having enough time to tick every single box, are our young junior cricketers who are doing a million other things in their lives going to have enough time to develop all their skills as well? Probably not. So it's a difficult one, but it's difficult to push people in the right direction if you can work out what the right direction is.
Yes, interesting stuff. So it's going back really to the idea of being a little bit more mindful about the way that you're playing, rather than assuming that just because it's done on the telly, it's the way to do things.
Yeah, exactly right. You know, you've got to think about it and see how it works in your environment. And also then, the difference between the telly and often the club player is just the amount of time they get to work at these things.
Okay, let's wrap up this section with the yes, no round. Three questions that can only be answered yes or no to, no matter how much more that the panel want to say. So here comes the three questions this week. First question. The better the standard, the quicker the spinner.
No.
Yes.
Second question. Worrying is a waste of energy.
Yes.
Yes.
Third question. There's always one who goes too far.
Yes.
No.
There isn't my team.
There isn't mine.
It's time now for the questions section. We open the mailbag and we look inside and we find some questions that have been sent in by listeners to this show or readers to the Pitch Vision Academy website. And the best question of the week wins a prize, which is, of course, an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can send your questions into us by emailing coach@pitchvision.com. So we got a couple of questionnaires ready to go. And the first one is Sahabir, and he says, hi there, Pitch Vision. I play in the High Schools League in New York City. We play 2020 only games, so when batting, we need to be hyper aggressive and play most of our shots in the air since the grass on our playing field is tall. It's so tall, we would need a machete to chop through them. My problem is that when I bat, I always try to play on the ground, but the ball goes nowhere. Every time I try to hit the ball hard in the air, I chip it up and get caught. Adding to my woes is that the playing surface on our pitches are matting, which don't bounce at all. Can you help me solve my problem? So this is a bit of a tactical query. How can he adjust his way of playing to match the conditions, which are very unusual? I mean, he's in New York for a start. You don't see that very often.
Well, it's great to get this type of question and from somewhere like New York. I think it's absolutely brilliant. It shows how far the podcast is reaching, which again is excellent.
Yeah.
It's a similar discussion, I suppose, to one that I had in Denmark recently when I was running a coaching course out there, and I went with my conventional views of this is how you should be doing things, and a hand went up and said, well, that's all very well and good, but our outfield is so long, we can't do that. So I turned it around and said, well, you know, what do the best players do in your environment? And it sounds as if the best players in the New York and Junior Cricket League are ones that can hit the ball over the top. But that isn't for everybody, is it? Or some people haven't developed that skill as yet. And what we talked about in Denmark, and I think it's relevant here as well, is to have the ability to use your feet to come down the wicket. Not necessarily to pump it up over the top, but just to provide that extra little bit of power that might enable you to hit the ball past the fielder, and it's going to get caught up in the grass, but you know, you might get yourself off strike, and it also changes the angle that you can strike the ball by just coming down. Now, some people do it by running down the wicket and really putting some momentum and some pace into your movement into the ball. Other people would do something like a Matt Hayden, who is a fantastic exponent of this, would just walk two steps down the wicket as the bowler was in their final throws, and it would be a very slow and staged walk.
Mm.
But what it would do is it would reduce the length or the distance that the bowler could get the ball to bounce in front, increase the instance of a half volley or a ball that can go up over the top, but also provide him with the ability to have a very stable base from which to hit from. And I think when you're looking to try and hit over the top, it's really important that we have stability and contact with the ground at ball strike for us to be able to use those ground forces to get it up and over. So the first thing that I'd explore is either running down the wicket or walking down the wicket to change the length, to change it up a bit against the bowler, but also to give you that momentum and that stability going back into the ball, which could give you that power base that you haven't previously had in order to hit one over the top. And then all you need to do, if it does go over the top and it goes for four, even if it goes for two, you often find that a captain will be then quite keen to get people back. And all of a sudden, those ground shots that you talked about, that you've grown up with, that you've developed, get you a run of ball, and then you start playing around with the opposition. So that would be my first point of call. The second one will be technically, is to really find out, and this is where video comes in again, and particularly side-on shots of video, of what your hitting over the top technique looks like. And obviously it's fairly immature as a technique. It's something that you're not particularly adept at or masterful at as yet. But it will give you a starting point to see what's going on. And I'm an absolutely terrible golfer. And I've got a massive predicament at the moment in that I'm going off in a week or so's time and playing with guys that are all single-figure handicaps on open golf courses. And I'm terrible. So the first thing I did yesterday was take myself off to the driving range and stick up a video camera and have a look at what was going on. Now, I'm no golf coach, but I also know how the body works in order to be able to propel a ball forward and relatively straight. And within an hour, I was hitting the ball completely differently to what I was doing before, because I had a foundation of what I was previously looking at and what I can work on. So, you know enough about cricket. You obviously do, in order to be able to send us a message in and ask us some questions. So that would be my starting point technically. What do you look like now? And you'll probably pick up two or three things, and maybe stuff that we've talked about before on the show can help you. But your body shape and your stability at ball strike, contact with the ground with your feet, and your contact point will all be shown on that video, and you'll be able to make some adjustments. But my starting point would be experiment with coming down the wicket and putting some momentum back into the ball.
Well, I think the other opportunity you've always got, which is something we kind of alluded to in the previous conversation about the different types of shots, is if you don't have the ability to generate power sometimes, is your other option is always just to use the pace of the ball, a paddle shot or some kind of ramp as well, where if you don't have the power to generate distance in the air, then maybe you can use the pace of the ball in specific circumstances to clear the infield or to clear the grass, as it were, in this situation. So that would be my other option, is using the pace of the ball as much as you can whilst you're looking to develop that additional power, which will help you do what Gareth suggested earlier on.
Gareth, going back to your point about using your feet and getting to the ball, it can be something which is hard to misjudge. You see players who get it wrong and they end up yorking themselves or playing over the ball as they get the length wrong. So what would your advice be to a player who's just learning how to move his feet to get down the pitch? Try and get to it on the half volley or on the full toss? Or,
well, I think it's difficult to do that against pace, certainly against spin. I very much encourage people to get the ball on the full toss. And if you can't get the ball on the full toss, then there's a good chance you could have manoeuvred yourself differently on the back foot to score. And that's one of Rob Marsh's greatest coaching sayings, I suppose. But against pace, that's not always easy to be able to get down, because obviously the length that a bowler bowls as a pace bowler is there's more difference between yorker to bouncer. So we can't guarantee that against pace bowlers. But certainly my thing would be maybe to start off slow and do the Matthew Hayden thing just to get used to it. That will give you a little bit more time, I suppose, and less body movements to try and control as you start off initially. But, you know, you can always end up yorking yourself. I think the best players of this, once they've developed the skill, when they come down and they do york themselves, because they're so adept and they're so masterful, they'll still get a bat on it. And often with deep mid on back or deep mid off, they'll manage to get a single off of that particular ball. So it becomes a more run scoring option. And if you get a yorker coming at you, if you're standing in the crease. But yeah, start off slow and steady. And ultimately, it's like any skill. You're going to make some stuff up. You're going to get it wrong every now and again at the early part of that skill development. That is what skill acquisition is all about. And those mistakes often give us the catalyst and the learning for us to move it on at an accelerated rate.
I think one of the things you can realise as well is a skill which is sometimes more difficult on a fast pitch with a fast outfield is keeping the ball close to you, which is an underrated skill as well. And if you've got someone bowling and you can keep the ball quite close to you, presumably as long as the keeper isn't straight onto it, you can generally find that at least you can play a drop and run game until you get yourself either a little bit more set and more confident in the way you're playing, or until the field does spread out with time because of the continuous runs are being scored or any other way.
And of course, with the long grass, the fielders are going to have to be wading through that to get to the ball. They're not going to be zipping in.
I'd imagine that the pickup situation is probably not as good. And also, if you just push it out towards cover, it's not going to go very far because of the long grass. So it's going to be closer to you, which is going to place more emphasis on the fielder actually having to run to get to the ball rather than him only having to take 4 or 5 steps. He's going to have to take 10, 12 steps. And in that time, if you've had a decent pre-planning discussion with your partner down the other end, and you've identified that there is an area where you're looking to drop and run, or maybe 2 or 3 areas where you're looking to drop and run. So by the time they've actually arrived at the ball, you're almost 3/4 of the way down and you're cruising through for your single. So that could be one thing you can do. And in doing that, potentially you'll find that the fielders come in closer, and in coming in closer, it then makes your job of hitting over the top a little bit easier. So there might be an avenue you can go down there in terms of trying to manipulate the field a little bit to make that job of hitting over the top slightly easier.
And of course, the good thing is if the conditions are consistent across the season, which it sounds like they are, then that's something that you can work on very hard and improve on very quickly. Whereas maybe in other countries where conditions change a lot throughout the season, like, for example, in England, you're playing on very different wickets in April and May than you are in August and into September. So maybe that's something that you can take hope from as well. Okay, next question is from Radinka. It's a short question, so we're going to have to do one of our explore the topic type of answers rather than just answer the question directly, which is basically a yes or no answer. And he says, sir, I'm a left-hand bowler. I'm 16 years old. Shall I use protein powder?
You know, it's always better to get your protein in particular from natural sources. You know, what's your training history been before? Because there's no point in loading all of this stuff on top of no foundation whatsoever in terms of training to be a fast bowler. And one of the things from working alongside a lot of really good fast bowlers over the years, and those that are incredibly keen, like a Stephen Jones on their strength and conditioning, is that they have the foundation to then add value, because that's what you want. Otherwise, all you're doing effectively is spending lots of money on something that isn't going to make a difference. So that would be my advice, really, is to have a good look at what you've done before, get as many nutrients and proteins from your natural diet as possible, and maybe make adaptations to that. But if you have got all of that in sorted and you want to make some real big changes to your training that's going to take you over the edge towards bowling much, much quicker, then it could be something that you could put on, but only if all of those things are in place beforehand.
Yeah, I mean, the first question, of course, is it going to cause any harm? Which we can be fairly confident that that's not the case. It's a well-researched supplement. So then the question becomes, how can it help me? And of course, it will. If you're taking extra protein and you're training in the right way, then that is going to help you improve your strength and your power. And that, of course, you can hit the ball harder and throw further and bowl faster, which are all good things, but it's just one element in the recipe. You can't just take the magic slightly foul tasting protein powder and expect everything else to fall into place automatically. It's one of the elements in the recipe of being a good cricketer. So it's interesting into the mind, really, Radinka, that he had one question, one shot at getting a question, and that was the thing that he went for. It makes me wonder why he chose that above all other things. I wonder if he thinks of it as some kind of a magic bullet, or whether he's got everything else dialed in brilliantly and he's just looking for that extra piece of advice. I wonder where he is on that scale.
And you know, that'd be interesting to find out as a follow-up, I suppose. Just going back a step, I think it's really important whenever you're dealing with supplements as well, is that you understand the source of where you're getting it from. And in particular, for those that have got aspirations for representative cricket, it's really important to check out the WADA lists, which you can get, so the World Anti-Doping Association lists, which list all of the appropriate sources that have been checked on a regular basis, because contamination is the main thing that gets people up on, particularly in cricket, in the urine tests that go through. It's not because they're using things that are on the banned list, it's because some of their proteins, in particular, is susceptible, are contaminated at source with other things. So just be very, very careful, particularly if you are on that representative ladder. Get yourself into the good habit of getting on the WADA website, asking any trainers that you may or may not be working with for their advice as well. But make sure everything's official and you're getting it from a reputable source.
You can delve into quite a lot of detail when it comes to protein as well. There's different types of protein. There's the times when to take them, how much to take. There's a great deal of research into these things because it's, you know, it's one of the most researched and probably one of the most used supplements that you can get out there. And there's so many different products and it can be a very confusing labyrinth of information. So if you feel like there's any confusion there about how and when and all the rest of it, then obviously there are resources online. We've got the Pitch Vision Academy pages has quite a lot of stuff about using protein powder in a way that will best benefit your cricket. But if you have got doubt about it, then you can be safe in the knowledge that it's not a requirement. It is a supplement. If you don't ever take protein powder, you can still achieve a lot in cricket. It's not a requirement. If you think it's going to give you a little 5% edge, then all the better, especially if you're a person who, is on the edge of going up to the next level and you want to find a way to get the edge. Then protein powder is one of the more common ways to find that edge. So I guess the advice we're saying is you have to play it a lot by your specific requirements. Now let's move on to the soapbox. We're going to jump up on there. We're going to shout and scream about something for 60 seconds. And this week, the shouter and the screamer is Mark Garawaya. Over to you, Gareth.
I'm going to talk about the difference between coaching and journalism and what's come up recently. I think it's fascinating, really. If a coach says something, then that soundbite is recorded, it's written down, and it's kept in a place for prosperity and for future reference. And Peter Moores is doing a brilliant job as England coach, 2-1 up in the series, is beginning to turn it around, is beginning to put some of his stamps on the England cricket team. Yet I still read journalists going back to his 2007 and 8 days and picking up on certain bits of jargon that he may have put in to some of his press conferences. I then fast forward it now to the difference that the same commentators are making, where they were slating the England team 2 weeks ago and saying how bad they were and Cook needs to be sacked and all of that, and now they turn around and saying that it's the best thing since sliced bread and the new era is with us and blah-de-blah-de-blah. I just love to see journalists playing by the same ball games of sound bites as coaches do.
Okay, and on that scathing attack on all journalism from Gareth, we're going to wrap up the show.
Yeah.
Luckily, journalists don't have a right to reply, so we'll be okay. Now, before we go, we're going to do something that we always do every week, which is going to decide on the winner of this week's online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy over at pitchvision.com. And we had those two questions from Sahabir about playing in New York, and Radinka about taking protein powder. So which one did you prefer, Gareth?
I'm going to go with our New York man, although I did love a Radinka in my career.
Who doesn't?
I'm going to go with our American Cricket League entry this week because it's lovely to get questions coming from all over the world.
It certainly is. Congratulations to you, Tabir. And if somebody wanted to send in their question to the show, just like the people have this week, and also get that chance to win the prize of the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. Gareth, how would they get in touch with us?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. You can also get the Twitter from @pitchvisionacad if you like tweeting. And if you want to head over to Facebook, you can find us on facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, where we post all kinds of exciting stuff, and you can send in your questions that way if you prefer. If you want to listen to this show every week, you can subscribe. It's a podcast. It's available all across the interwebs, wherever you like to look. iTunes, it's in there. You can do a search for it. You can have a look in the iPhone or iPad podcast app. You can find us in there. Or if you want to use something else, like Downcast, that's available as well. Pocket Cast. Just do a search in any of those and you'll find us in there. If you want to use the RSS feed instead, we still have one of those. That's how podcasting works. You can go over to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link for all the details there. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Lavers. Cheers, Garris.
Cheers, boys.